around 2 a.m. I heard a bang on my door. Boom, 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 boom. Pirate attack, pirate attack.
Everything just happened like a drama. They came on board with ladder. They started shooting. Everybody was frightened because we were moving on gunpoint.
It's a saddening experience because I was scared. They might sink the boat and you're just in the place hiding and you die there, and that would be the worst death. I wouldn't want such death. I better see what's killing me than just hide and die. I would always have this flashback.
Sometimes they can tie me behind like a goat, then beat me properly the way they want. Very, very rough. It come to a stage whereby I look for a way to maybe harm myself and die. The suffering is too much.
Permission to come on board, Captain?
You can come on board.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Zipping up my life vest. I'm now on board a small boat in Lagos in Nigeria, and we're about to head out into some of the busiest and most dangerous waters in the world.
I'm Mary Harper, and over the next hour in Chasing West Africa's Pirates here on the BBC, I'll be exploring the complex and deadly world of piracy in the Gulf of Guinea. I'll find out what's being done to fight the pirates and sea robbers and the sometimes murky links this involves. I look at the economic and human cost of maritime crime and speak to those in the front line of suffering who are all too often forgotten, the seafarers themselves.
I've been affected by piracy, was raided and they were hostage for 4 days. They killed all the military personnel. We're surprised they didn't kill any civilian.
The attacks are brutal, they are deadly. You know, on board the fishing trawler, we have the cold room. At times, the pirates come in and they throw in the captain and chief engineer into the cold room. They freeze to death.
Monumental corruption in the oil and gas industry is fueling the piracy in the Gulf of Guinea. There is an urgent need for a coordinated international response. Don't forget, about a quarter of America's oil is going to be coming from here very soon.
We're now heading out to sea, and the huge city of Lagos is disappearing from sight. I can see tanker after tanker sitting in the sea, waiting to come into the congested port of Lagos. They're not actually allowed to anchor here. Sitting targets, really, I would imagine. There's one in front of me now, the Vaughan, which looks like a barge of some sort, and I can see the sailors washing. They've hung it up on the line, and a few crew members. And it's very low in the water, so anybody who wanted to board that ship to rob it, it wouldn't be that difficult. And there's small fishing boats coming and going past. And apparently some of the fishing boats sometimes also double as pirate boats. They have sometimes weapons secreted away.
Somalia used to be the piracy hotspot where everybody was afraid of, but right now, piracy in Somalia has taken a plunge while the piracy in the Gulf of Guinea is escalating.
Bolaji Akinola is a maritime expert focusing on the Gulf of Guinea, an area of crucial global importance because of its oil. And where there's oil, there are tankers. And where there are tankers and poor security at sea, there are pirates and oil thieves. Add to this the cargo ships and fishing vessels swarming in and out of the ports of West Africa, more than a dozen countries in all. Little wonder it was last year declared by the International Maritime Bureau as one of the world's worst piracy hotspots, overtaking Somalia as Africa's most troubled region and by far its most violent. A study by the Oceans Beyond Piracy Group found that in 2013, nearly 300 seafarers were taken hostage in the Gulf of Guinea. This is almost certainly a conservative figure, as it's estimated that only a third of attacks off the coast of West Africa are reported.
Oil is like honey, attracting ants and flies and all of that. So oil is big money. Nigeria, for instance, which is the 11th largest oil producer in the world, does not have functional refineries because of corruption. Because of this, every day you see hundreds of vessels, tankers on Nigerian waters going in and coming out, taking out crude oil and then bringing in refined products. So naturally they became susceptible.
And what happens to that oil once it's siphoned off by pirates onto another ship? Who buys it? Where does it go?
To either a country or to a multinational organization that buy cheaply from these people. It's a highly lucrative, organized crime. Over the next 3-4 years, I foresee at least up to 10% increase annually in the rate of attacks.
When I look at the reported pirate attacks from the International Maritime Bureau, you see places like Ghana, Congo, Ivory Coast, all being
westwards,
affected.
The pirates are going further west and further south. And many a times, those attacks are attributed to Nigerian pirates. When it gets worse, it will be a wake-up call to the international community.
What started as a largely Nigerian problem is spreading to the west and south, with, in January 2014, a particularly audacious hijacking all the way down off the coast of Angola in southern Africa. It's like squeezing a balloon. The situation might have improved slightly off the coast of Nigeria, but the pirates simply move on to plunder other waters, often treating seafarers with extreme violence. In its effort to combat maritime crime, Nigeria has a bewildering number of government agencies, partnerships with private security companies, even deals with former seafaring militants who have themselves carried out spectacular acts of piracy. One government body is the Nigerian Maritime Administration and Safety Agency, NIMASA, where Captain Waredi Enisuo is a senior member of staff.
We are now at Apapa Port, first port in this country. Quite a lot of exports from this particular place and import from this particular place by even the colonial masters and also slave traders who named this particular city Lagos, though known as Lagos, because it's got a lot of lagoons. So it's a very, very interesting place. It has gone from government into private hands as well, which is why you are seeing a lot of construction work going on to improve its efficiency and also the business. As you know, ships are getting bigger, the container trade is booming. We need deeper ports, so you can see a lot of dredging going on and a lot of construction of new jetties that can take deeper draft ships.
I went out beyond the port and there's just scores of ships waiting to come in or anchored there. Doesn't that make the ships very vulnerable?
Well, to some extent, yes. And that is why we provide a 24-hour patrol service to ensure that they are safe. And we also monitor them via satellite and radar as well.
And we're now in the satellite surveillance center.
It's a restricted area because of the sensitivity of the information you're going to see.
Two watchkeepers.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
How are you?
And you can see the screens there. They are tied to the computers here that are connected to the satellite system. And on the left side, it's a map. And this particular map is a vector map. And then the one on the right side is a raster map.
It's a Nigerian developed system.
It's a Nigerian developed system with foreign partners. A lot of those things out there in the market did not address our local problems, like oil theft, sea robbery, piracy in the international seas near us, even ship theft, you know, falsification of identity and things like that may not be their problem.
OK, Can you just talk me through some of the markings on the map?
Okay, as you can even see now, so just as we're talking, you can see that alert has just come up. Ship-to-ship contact detected. Take the mouse to center on and click on it. It takes us straight to the location, okay? And whatever you see on the center of the screen, you can see that line connecting two of them. This means that these two ships, there and that, had some form of relationship. The line between them is dotted, which means they possibly may have switched off the identity when they were having that particular relationship. So it is now left for us to now find the identity of the ship, seek the agent, call him that, look, this is the situation. But in some cases, we do not call if our own instincts tell us that this is criminal, especially in a situation where the two ships are almost of the same size. It could also be a bigger commercial ship that cannot enter port, but discharging its cargo into a ship that can make port. It's also a possibility, but we take nothing for granted.
And I've noticed that there are quite a lot of dotted lines, which means there are a lot of ships in your waters who are hiding their identity.
That is very, very correct. In fact, you've got that 99.9999% right.
Doesn't that worry you?
Well, it does worry me, but it gives me a good sense of humor sometimes, because while they think they're hiding, I can see them.
And if, as you say, you really are suspicious that something's going on,
yes,
how will you respond?
Okay. Now, this morning alone, we're responding to a particular incident out there. This incident happened at about 30 miles offshore. The system was able to detect the fellow came in at night, stayed in a particular location for a while, and then went back after having something to do with the ship. Why did it come here at night? So we are interrogating that particular fellow now. So this morning we've sent out the military. So we make all these analyses before we launch. As you know, launching a full-blown surveillance mission is an expensive mission, and that's why we do all we can to make sure that we put the bits and pieces together.
Another key player in the fight against piracy is the Navy. At the Beecroft Naval Base in Lagos, I was led around by Rear Admiral Samuel Alade and his mass of men in starched and gleaming white.
You are welcome to Nigerian Navy ship Beecroft. I'm Commander Oyo Wade. And here you will see our vessels. The smaller ones, they are basically for anti-piracy, anti-poaching, illegal operations in crude oil and oil theft. We have reduced the issue of piracy in our maritime environment here drastically, to the extent that they are aware of our presence, and most of the time they shift out of this area to carry out that, because they know that we always have our presence at sea, both helicopter and also these smaller boats.
Rear Admiral, how many frigates does the Navy have?
Well, we have a couple of them.
Two. Is that enough for a huge country like Nigeria?
Obviously not enough, and that is why we are acquiring more. Let me also say this, that this issue of piracy, we are having some international cooperation. First, information sharing, then operations. Right now, we are looking at a possibility of reviving Operation Prosperity, which was between Nigeria and Benin Republic.
Was that when you did joint patrols
joint
against
patrol,
piracy?
Joint patrol against piracy. That approval has been given.
Isn't one of the main problems in West Africa that you've got so many countries, and quite a few of them haven't got excellent relationships between them, let's say Nigeria and Cameroon, who've even had border disputes and other problems? Doesn't that make information sharing, or even more, having joint patrols,
not
a risky,
never,
and difficult thing?
Never, never, never. We are collaborating. In fact, sometime in April, we had a major exercise here, exercise Obangame Express. It was a huge success, and it was about collaborating with each other to ensure absolute security of Gulf of Guinea.
And who was collaborating? How many countries?
That exercise was essentially driven by the United States and her partners in Europe and South America. So many countries participated. In Lagos area alone, we had 12 countries simultaneously in Cameroon and Angola.
the Gulf of Guinea has begun to wake up to its piracy problem. In June 2013, West and Central African countries agreed to set up regional centres to share information and coordinate efforts to combat maritime crime. But progress has been slow, partly because there's so many countries involved and everyone wants to protect their sovereignty at sea as well as on land. Also, navies don't have enough gunboats for anti-piracy patrols. So private companies are filling the gaps, providing boats, maintenance and advice. One of them even has an office deep inside the Nigerian naval base.
My name is Commodore Chuma Adogo, retired, the General Manager of Business Development, Ocean Marine Securities Limited.
So your base is somehow within the naval base. Yeah. Why is that?
We are operating embedded in the Navy, because if you see our boats, they have Navy colors and they bear the same names as the Nigerian Navy boats. We provide the platforms, the Navy mans them.
Isn't that a bit strange that it's a private company that has boats that are painted in the colors of the Nigerian Navy?
Yeah, because of the MOU we have.
The Memorandum of Understanding.
The Memorandum of Understanding, yes. Three are here.
They're painting them freshly with a gray paint.
Yeah, we offer logistic support for these boats to run. They say the boat is like a woman, you have to maintain her all the time.
Not just like a woman, like an old woman.
What do you mean by that? Back in his office, I ask Rear Admiral Alade whether the Navy has outsourced to private companies its responsibility for securing Nigeria's waters.
No, that is not the situation. But you will agree with me also that the Nigerian Navy cannot do it alone. We can't do it alone. For some time now, we've had some issues with functional platforms like boats. And because of that, we feel that the private security companies with their assets could help. And that is why they approached us. They are businessmen anyway, okay? But the point is, the Nigerian Navy has the ownership of the security of Nigerian waters. And the plan of the Nigerian Navy in the very, very nearest future is to take absolute control. Our engagement with private maritime security companies will begin to come down, maybe.
That doesn't look likely anytime soon. In fact, private security companies play a crucial and growing role in fighting piracy in the Gulf of Guinea. Some of them started off on the other side of Africa, protecting ships from Somali pirates. But perhaps victims of their own success, their work there is drying up. So they're looking for new markets, and West Africa is proving something of a gold mine.
How are you doing?
Samuel.
OMS.
I'm 10 nautical miles out to sea with Sven Hansen, a former member of the British Special Forces, who now consults for the private security company I met inside the naval base. As well as providing gunboats and advisors, the company has come up with another idea for keeping pirates at bay.
Cheers, Samuel.
So we've now been given permission to enter the secure anchorage area, and the naval officers on board, several of them are armed. Sven, this naval patrol boat, NNS Eagle, that's right behind us, whose boat is that?
That's Ocean Marine Security's vessel, which is the private maritime company working in partnership to provide this secure anchorage area. But the weapons, the ammunition and the guys behind those systems are all Nigerian Navy. Private contractors are not permitted to carry or use arms in inside territorial waters, in fact, throughout the Gulf of Guinea.
This secure anchorage area, how does this work?
Probably the easiest way to describe this is a secure car park. It's a safe area, it's a safe zone that's protected by the Nigerian Navy, that effectively when a vessel turns up to go into berth and is delayed and can't go into the safety of berth, then it has the option of either coming to anchor in this secure anchorage area or heading back out 200 nautical miles out of the high-risk area. And obviously that involves extra costs. So, yeah, this is a safe car park where they can pull up and put anchor for the night.
How much do they pay?
It's a $3,000 fee for the first 2 days and then $1,500 every day thereafter. the average waiting time that you'll see client vessels in here will be anywhere between 3 and possibly 8 days. Some of the bigger tankers could be here even longer.
And these ships that I can see now, what kind of cargo are they carrying?
Predominantly these vessels are oil tankers, and oil tankers obviously do a lot of their transfer of their oil to smaller vessels offshore, and that's when they're particularly vulnerable because they're static, they're stationary, there's pipes obviously going between the two vessels. These vessels are at anchor, so the pirates attack them mostly while they are at anchor inside territorial waters. Slightly different on the east coast, where you've got a vessel underway doing about 20 knots. And if you think that pirates can board those vessels, this actually is not that difficult in comparison, if it's unprotected.
And does this work?
So far, we haven't even had a single incident of a pirate or pirates attempting to attack vessels in the secure anchorage area. And I think the fundamental principle is that the secure anchorage area represents a deterrent as opposed to a response. And obviously it's a lot better not to be attacked in the first place rather than trying to defend yourself against an attack, especially if you're sitting on top of thousands of tons of dangerous flammable cargo.
And I understand that there are various different kinds of piracy off the coast of West Africa.
You've got the very basic piracy, if you want to call it basic, is the classic armed robbery at sea, which is no different than what has been happening for centuries. Pirate groups simply attacking a vessel, any kind of vessel, even local shipping vessels or fishing vessels, to steal money, to steal radios, to steal mobile phones. At the next scale up, you're looking at cargo theft, which really probably is the most predominant threat in West Africa. If you look at the attacks off Lomé in Togo, the pirates hijacking an oil tanker, taking her away to a quiet area, and then conducting a series of ship-to-ship transfer operations and stealing the oil. The next scale up from that is the kidnap for ransom crews, which you see on the East Coast. They're not so prevalent, but they are in operation. You know, there's been a few cases this year where pirates have boarded explicitly, it appears, to simply remove an expatriate chief engineer or master.
And Sven, why are you here? Why are you doing this job?
I mean, interestingly, I'm very much a poacher-turned gamekeeper, because my role in the military formerly was to actually try and board these vessels to recapture them from terrorists that might have hijacked them and turned them into, for instance, weapons of mass destruction.
You're listening to Chasing West Africa's Pirates on the BBC World Service with me, Mary Harper. Over the next half hour, we'll find out more about who the pirates are, and in exclusive interviews with the BBC, we'll hear from the hidden victims of piracy, the seafarers, including a man who was attacked in both Nigeria and Somalia.
If I sit down somewhere thinking about it alone, it's enough for me to make up my mind not to go to the sea again. Anytime I see anything that looks like pirates, oh, they have come here again. They have come again.
The BBC World Service.
The outbreak of the Ebola virus is affecting many people across West Africa.
It's more difficult to stop it now when it's at a low level than when it was at the peak.
So every weekday here on the BBC World Service, there's a roundup of the latest developments.
The aid agency, Médecins Sans Frontières, says despite a significant reduction in the number of Ebola cases, new hotspots are emerging.
We'll have the latest medical news.
Some of the hospitals are trying to reopen.
Reports from the places affected.
This is where the two-year-old girl who had Ebola travelled through 2 weeks ago on her way from Guinea to Western Mali.
International reaction.
We are not yet on the true downward curve or close to zero.
That's news about Ebola from the BBC World Service.
The newspapers, radio stations and television, everything they talk about or write has to do with Ebola.
Online at bbcworldservice.com.
This is the BBC World Service. I'm Mary Harper, and I've travelled to one of the world's worst piracy hotspots, the Gulf of Guinea, to explore the economic and human costs of this violent and escalating crime. Join me after the news in Chasing West Africa's Pirates as I meet the often forgotten victims, the seafarers, whose lives can be shattered by pirate attacks.
BBC News.
The United States' most senior military officer, General Martin Dempsey, has been meeting American commanders in Iraq. They're preparing to expand American assistance to Iraqi and Kurdish forces fighting Islamic State militants. After visiting Baghdad, General Dempsey went on to the Kurdish capital of Erbil. Western leaders in Australia for the G20 summit have warned Russia to abide by a ceasefire deal in Ukraine or face further sanctions. President Obama described Russia's actions as appalling. Russia denies deploying forces across the Ukrainian border. Tens of thousands of people have demonstrated in the Georgian capital, Tbilisi, against a planned agreement between Russia and Georgia's breakaway region of Abkhazia. The proposed agreement envisages the creation of joint Russian and Abkhazian military forces. The Serb ultra-nationalist leader Vojislav Šešelj, who has returned to Belgrade after 11 years in detention in The Hague, has addressed thousands of supporters. He said Serbia should ally itself with Russia and not with the European Union. Three Brazilians have been given prison sentences of more than 20 years each for killing a young woman and eating parts of her body. The three, a man, his wife and his mistress, lured the victim to their house with the promise of work as a nanny. Police in the Dutch city of Gouda say they've arrested 90 people after scuffles broke out between protesters for and against the controversial Black Piet figure. Black Piets are the helpers of St. Nicholas at a traditional Dutch children's festival. Critics say Black Piet, invariably played by white people with blackened faces, is a racist stereotype. One of Napoleon Bonaparte's famous hats is up for auction in France this weekend. The two-pointed felt hat is part of a huge collection of items linked to the French general, owned by the royal family of Monaco. BBC News.
I'm now going to climb onto one of the Nimasa big military gunboats, and it's a rope ladder, a bit like the pirates have to climb up.
I'm Mary Harper, and in this BBC programme, Chasing West Africa's Pirates, I'm in Nigeria, exploring the problem of crime at sea and what's being done to try to stop it in a region rich in oil, fishing and maritime trade. The Nigerian Maritime Administration and Safety Agency, or NIMASA, is at the forefront of the fight against piracy. One of its senior officials, Captain Waredi Enisuo, took me out to sea to visit gunboats hired in by the agency.
And so what kind of weapons do you have mounted on this boat?
A bit of a security question, but they are designed to sink another vessel.
I mean, what I can see in front of me, they're wrapped in green cloth, but
exactly.
they're very big.
They are very, very big, and we have to protect them. If we leave them open in this environment, it could look very, very threatening also. So we only open them at sea.
Has NIMASA often had to engage in gun battles?
Not very often. We had that experience once.
Was anyone killed?
Well, there was. We had a casualty.
The size of the guns reflects the size of the problem. West Africa has the continent's most dangerous waters, and it's up there near the top of the world's worst piracy hotspots. Experts say there's been an escalation in violence in the Gulf of Guinea, with at least 1,200 seafarers killed or wounded in 2014.
On the 14th of August this year, I was on watch, 2240 hours, they came, about 100 meters starboard quarter of us, stern. I sighted them because I saw the way the swell took the boat up, so I beamed the searchlight. And, you know, it's a big light, it was sudden, and they were scared. So they swung round and took off.
Rotimi George is a Nigerian navigation officer. This is the first time he's telling the world what happened to him in the oil-rich Niger Delta. Crew members affected by piracy are often too traumatised to speak or are told to keep quiet by shipping companies.
12 midnight, when I was handing over to my chief officer, I told him that I had a near attack, and I told him to be vigilant. I left the bridge to my cabin, and then around 2 a.m. I heard a bang on my door. Boom, 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 boom. Pirate attack, and the procedure is that we all go to the safe haven, which is the engine room, and that is what we did. Hid myself somewhere. The pirate started firing the boat. There's a level you fire the boat, there will be alarm sounding in the engine room, and we heard all those alarms and scared and all that. So captain and chief mate just made the decision that they won't be in the engine room while pirates are in control of the ship. And they surrendered to them around 6:45 or thereabouts. They took the captain and the chief officer.
So the captain and the chief officer, where were they from?
Well, the captain is from Russia. The chief officer is from Ukraine.
What happened to them?
They were taken to the creeks.
Creeks in the Niger Delta?
Yeah, and they stayed for some days. Well, I have received email from my captain and the chief mate. They're all fine. They've been released.
Do you know if a ransom was paid for their release?
Even if it was paid, company wouldn't tell you.
Do you know who these pirates are?
I didn't see them, sincerely. But according to my crew, the language they were speaking were Ijo language, famous language in the Niger Delta. I was told they were 7, I think, and they said they were all between the age of 28 and 35. But they had one leader who was more matured.
Were they heavily armed?
My crew said they were. They had AK-47. They shot some of our doors in the ship, looted our boat, took our properties, our laptops, our phones and stuff like that. They beat some of the crew.
And when the pirates were on board for all those hours and you were hiding, what were you thinking?
Well, sincerely, I was scared. You don't really know. You're thinking maybe something, they might sink the boat and you're just in the place hiding and you die there. And that would be the worst death for me, because, I mean, you're hiding and you die there. I wouldn't want such death. I better see what's killing me than just hide and die. It's a saddening experience, because you would expect more from life. I thank God I'm safe.
This sounds very much like a case of kidnap for ransom, long the norm off the coast of Somalia, but now a growing trend in the Gulf of Guinea. Similar to Rotimi's case, there are other reports of pirates sorting through the crew and taking away Westerners or Asians who are considered high-value hostages. Rotimi described how the pirates spoke Ijo, a language spoken in the Niger Delta. Maritime expert Bolaji Akinola shares the view that this is where many of the pirates come from, although they're only a small part of a complex global web.
About 6-7 years ago, there was an agitation in the Niger Delta area. The communities there, their environments are degraded, their means of livelihood are destroyed, you know, by the activities of the oil exploring companies. So because of that, they picked up arms. Eventually, government was able to contain that and offered the militants amnesty. I believe strongly that a good chunk of those arms and ammunition are still out there.
So would it be correct to say that most of the pirates are people who were either previously fighting or at least have the weapons of those people?
Yes, I think that's the correct position. Now, apart from that, we have people who have trained to work on board ships, but because they are not getting those jobs to do, they fall into the hands of these criminal elements who use them. The third group also, we have quite a number of Nigerian ship owners, but you will realize that 80% of the ships are not gainfully employed. They then become available to be used for some of these illicit and illegal activities on the waters. And let me say also that the Western nations are not helping matters.
What do you mean by that?
If people steal crude, a shipload of crude, it's got to be sold to international companies. It's got to be sold to even countries.
I managed, with the help of an intermediary, to convince an active pirate to speak to me on the phone. As he's a wanted man, he didn't want to meet me face to face.
Not everybody came to the amnesty. So those people that would not come to the amnesty, they vibrate.
They vibrate, you said?
Yeah, they vibrate. They went to the river, any boat that they see, they shoot. They open fire. Uh-huh.
Why are they so violent to the crew?
Why we attack them and why we beat them, eh?
Yes.
Because they eat the government money, they eat Shell money, and we, nothing. Nothing. We have to beat you very fine.
So you beat these people because they take money from oil companies?
That is normal. That is normal. We have to collect because of hunger.
The boys in the creeks, who may be the foot soldiers, may be getting the peanuts. We are sure that it has transnational involvement.
One powerful man from the creeks of the Niger Delta is Patrick Akpobolokemi, the head of the Nigerian Maritime and Safety Agency.
Since I became the CEO of this agency, I've come to realize that many of the reported cases about piracy are incorrect. Some of them are phantom. Some, they raise the flag so that some economic benefits can come. This war risk premium that they are taking is also exacerbating the situation. Because for you to collect the war risk premium, you must paint a situation that there is piracy and the place is almost ungovernable.
By war risk premium, you mean the premium that's been put on the waters, Togo, Benin, Nigeria, very high premium because this is designated war risk area because of piracy and sea robbery.
Yes, and who are the operators of these companies? The Western world. So there is a conspiracy in this game called piracy.
It's interesting that you say that a lot of this reporting of piracy is phantom because credible reports written by experts and academics say that only a third of piracy is reported, that in fact it's much worse than what the official figures say.
No, I think that is unfair to us. We have challenged shippers. Tell us when your vessel is coming in and when it is going out. What are you doing in our territory? You put off your AIS, suddenly you will say you are attacked.
They switch off their identity, you mean?
Many of those that have reported that they were attacked, more than 70% of the cases, which means something is wrong somewhere.
It's not quite as simple as that. International safety guidelines for ships entering the Gulf of Guinea urge vessels to turn off their identities in order to avoid being tracked and attacked by pirates. The world of piracy is complicated, as are some of the anti-piracy tactics. Like the Navy, Nimasa doesn't have enough of its own boats to patrol the waters, so relies heavily on the private sector. One contract involving another powerful man from the Niger Delta has raised many eyebrows and has even been discussed in Nigeria's parliament. Can you explain something to me? Nimasa has paid, I believe it's more than $300 million, to a company which is called Global West Specialist Vessels Limited, which is run by a former senior militant from the Delta, Tompolo, and that this company is supposed to ensure maritime security. What kind of message is it sending?
Tompolo is not a owner or a director of Global West. Even assuming he's one of the owners, he's a bona fide Nigerian that have got an understanding with the federal government in terms of how peace can be brought back to the Niger Delta. Is he not entitled to do business with the Nigerian government? So, Tompolo is not the owner of Global West.
But I'm confused because...
But
if I can just go one step further. Yeah. We asked to interview Tompolo. Mm. First of all, Tompolo said we should interview the managing director of his company, Global West. Mm. And then he just sent a message, and the message said that it wouldn't be proper for us to interview the MD of his company, but we should interview you, the head of Nimasa, who hired his company.
Did you meet Tompolo in person? So are you sure that you even talked to the Tompolo in the first place?
I'm on my way to meet a former militant leader from the Niger Delta who back in 2008 shocked the oil world when he stormed a huge oil platform which is more than 100 kilometres out to sea. And bizarrely, this man who used to lead these audacious acts of piracy has now been hired to fight the very crimes that he himself used to commit.
Yeah, come in.
Hello, thank you.
Yeah.
Hello.
Greetings, my name's Mary Harper. I come from the BBC.
Well, I'm Ibikabo with Victor Bell, what I'm popularly known as General Boyloaf.
And the name Boyloaf, where does it come from?
Back in the days when I was in school, you know, maybe because of my attitude towards some certain food, and they just named me Boyloaf.
So did that mean you loved eating bread?
That was then.
So in August, you were asked to head up a task force to deal with the problem of sea piracy. It seems a bit strange.
To me, it doesn't look strange because we know the terrain more than even the Nigerian security. Because we've done it before when we were combating the Nigerian state just because of marginalization.
In the last few years, a number of former militants, yourself, Tom Polo, and others, have been doing quite nicely. They've received contracts from the government. I mean, you couldn't be further from life in the creeks. You're living in the capital, Abuja. You have a huge, beautiful house. You've got a big gym outside. Lots of luxurious possessions.
Well, we can't call it luxury, but that is life for you. You know, like Tom Polo and all the rest, they are all businessmen. But as of me, things have been so difficult. Like formerly, the way the amnesty was supposed to be run, they are supposed to have some package for even the leaders. But right now, they've even choked the amnesty. So that is what is creating some of the problems.
It sounds like you're threatening the government.
Why?
To keep the taps on, otherwise there's going to be violence in the Niger Delta again.
No, to me, I'm not threatening. I don't threaten, and I just give a word of advice because I know what my people are capable of doing.
When the Nigerian pirates came, we were guided by soldiers. We took them as escorts. They killed all the military personnel. 16 of them were killed.
Kings Nemahie Okoye is a marine engineer. He's been a seafarer for a quarter of a century.
We were afraid until we set free 4 days in the forest.
Was the ransom paid for you, do you know?
No money was paid. The diesel they took us as their own compensation to themselves. They siphoned all the diesel that we were carrying, and it worth much money.
And when you were being held by them, how did they treat you?
Their treatment is nothing to write home about. They can put you down, march on you. They can kill. The Nigerians are fast killing than the foreign pirates. If they see you with a gun, it means you are a military man. They fire you.
And were you also affected by piracy another time?
I was taken by Somalian pirates. These people came out from their territory. We were about 150 miles away from Pakistan. Everything just happened like a drama. They came on board with ladder. When they came on board, they started shooting. So we came out to surrender. Well, everybody was frightened because we were moving on gunpoint.
So they were forcing you to steer that boat to Somalia at gunpoint?
Yes, it was terrible because I was not having the mind that I would survive it. We were held hostage in Somalia for 13 months before company paid some ransom. We were set free.
Were the pirates rough with you at all?
Very, very rough. Sometimes they can tie me behind like a goat, then beat me properly the way they want. It come to a stage whereby I look for a way to maybe harm myself and die. Maybe I could just jump into the sea and die. Or if they want to kill me, let them kill me because the suffering is too much. Nigerian pirates, at least we can communicate. So it's easier with me than Somali pirates.
There's a line of women in front of me, all dressed in colourful outfits, each one sitting at a small table, piled high with lots of varieties of fish. Good afternoon, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
What is it you're selling here?
Prawns, fish, lobsters, crab, squid.
Look at that squid. It's bigger than your head.
Bigger than my head, though. This one is bigger. It's so heavy.
We're standing here under a bridge, right? Yes. In the center of Lagos.
Of course, and you have we are under bridge, law school under bridge.
Where do you get these from?
The trawler boat bring them. is from the sea, the ice sea.
And all these prawns and fish and lobster, and squid and everything else you have.
It's from, yes.
Is it popular? Do people here love it?
Very, very. They love it.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
You. I'm Mary Harper, and in this BBC programme, I've been exploring piracy off the coast of West Africa. And it's not just the oil industry that's been affected by piracy. The fishing business has also taken a really bad battering.
In year 2004, we had about 36 fishing companies. Right now, we have less than 10. And we had a fleet of almost 300. As we speak, we have less than 90. And associated with that is the closure of cottage industries. And we have seen the loss of jobs of over 100,000.
Margaret Onyema Orakusi was the first female president of the Nigerian Trawler Owners Association.
The attacks are brutal, they are deadly. You know, on board the fishing trawler, we have a code room. At times, the pirates come in and they throw in the captain and chief engineer into the code room. They freeze to death.
Have any of your crew ever died in these freezes?
Oh, yes. And when they take the vessels, they plant explosives, then they call the base, that means calling us for ransom. And in the process of trying to negotiate with them, you may be so unfortunate that they will tell you, oh, do you think we are joking that this is a child's play? And you hear gunshots and they will tell you, we have just killed two of your crew.
When pirates attack fishing trawlers, what do they take?
Sometimes they take the trawler as a bait to attack bigger vessels. You know, and when the big vessels see them coming, they say, oh, okay, this trawler needs assistance, and they slow down. The pirates are always ahead of us in thinking, you know, and then they sell the products, prawns, lobsters, I mean, these are real money. I call it a mafia operation. They have a lot of buyers, even big-time hotels.
Do you think that the authorities in Nigeria are beating the problem? They're doing enough?
It's beyond the fight of a government. Piracy has gone regional. In those good old days, good in quotes, your vessel is taken by the pirates. You could call two or three of the warlords.
Militant leaders in the Niger Delta?
Yes, you could call, I'm looking for my vessel. Do you have my vessel with you? They will confirm. And then you can then discuss with them, you know. Now that they have gone regional, a vessel of mine was taken. The security agencies, they were all looking for the vessel. And one of the warlords said to us, not to worry, he is going to look for the vessel. Within 2 hours, they called us, they found our vessel. Guess what they did? They went, overpowered the pirates, recovered our vessel, and from the high sea, returned the vessel to our jetty in Lagos.
Did you have to pay them a ransom, Mark?
I didn't. They were very upset that some character from some other country could come into their environment to take a vessel. And it's a classic case of taking a thief to catch a thief.
What do you think about the situation now when these warlords, as you describe them, many of them have been employed, contracted, paid millions to try to secure Nigeria from the very problems that they themselves were responsible for? Is that right?
Well, I don't know what is right or what is wrong in this situation. I say, as a businesswoman, I prefer this situation. At least pirates get up in the morning to go for their activities. There is an element of fear. Unlike a situation where nobody was challenging them, nobody was looking for them, they had the free hand.
The maritime expert, Bolaji Akinola, thinks it's dangerous to employ former Delta militants and pirates to fight maritime crime.
If people who raised up arms against the state and now protecting its most precious facilities, if they are no longer satisfied with what they are getting, don't you think they can hold the state to ransom?
The model that appears to have worked off the coast of Somalia is to have international naval patrols and armed guards on board vessels. But neither of those are really going to work in a far more complicated environment where you have several functioning countries and laws that forbid private armed guards on ships. What would work in West Africa?
I am strongly in support of a joint naval patrol by all of these countries with the support of the International Maritime Organization, the EU and the United States of America, to patrol all of this Gulf of Guinea. Stolen crude should become an aberration for anyone to buy. Some people must have been attacked for that to be stolen. We need to start talking about blood oil.
While the experts, West African countries and international bodies continue to talk about the problem and come up with ideas about how to fix it, the pirate attacks continue. All of us are paying the price. The increased costs of insurance and protection, the losses from ransom payments and cargo theft, all translate into higher prices for the food we eat, the petrol for our cars, anything that needs to be brought by ship from West Africa. But the highest price of all is paid by the seafarers, Rotimi George and Kings Nemaiha Okoye.
Since it was a first experience, I would always have this flashback, but hey, I'm a Christian, I pray to God and I'll be fine.
And you feel comfortable about going back to sea?
The sea is our life, you know what I mean? You want me to sing a song for you? You say, the song goes thus, save my woman when I sail, okay, that save my woman when I sail, hallelujah, if I happen to die on the battlefield, never mind, we shall meet again, okay, that I'll sail on, that's the story. Sail on as far as I could go. Pirates can't stop my dreams, my visions.
I'm still looking for another sea work, but not the one that will take me to Somalia. Since then, I haven't gotten a job. We hardly survive even.
Were you compensated in any way by the company after you were held for more than a year?
The company is owned by a Nigerian. The negotiation of our salary was verbal. So the man decides anything he likes. He was supposed to pay, but he don't want to pay. Just like that.
So you haven't received even the basic payment
as not
a seafarer for all that time, let alone any other compensation for being held captive?
He has not. The only thing he does, the time we came back, he gave me some little money to hold on. And I was thinking something more is coming. All he told me was that he's not going to pay any money anymore.
You've been listening to Chasing West Africa's Pirates on the BBC World Service with me, Mary Harper. The producer was Penny Dale. The BBC.